Dealing with two major passages. The first is found, of course, our text in 2 Kings chapter 2, and then the other from Proverbs 24 in verses 1, 2, 3, and 4. I would like to, just as a matter of reminder, read up to verse 10, as I did this morning, because I think it is important enough for you to know that good leadership is based on many of the qualities that are found within this particular passage. Things to avoid, as well as things to obviously embrace. Do not be envious of evil men, verse 1 says, nor desire to be with them. Envy here, of course, is used as a mental attitude sin, and too often we find ourselves envious of evil only because of their prosperity. There is a question asked in the scriptures. How come and why is it that the wicked prosper? Well, I mentioned this morning the answer is simple. As long as they're on top side of earth, they might as well get the best that they can as long as they're alive, because once they close their eyelids in death, it's the lake of fire, or at least in eternal separation from God, and eventually the prepared lake of fire for them. For their minds devise violence, and their lips talk of trouble. Another one of the characteristics, of course, is that good leadership does not malign. You will find that maligners do not make good leaders, nor do slanderers. By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. Many of us, of course, who have done any building know that we would have desired to have a lot more wisdom with regard to the subject that we were involved with, because had we known before we did what we did, we may not have had the problems that we had as we were building. And so the Lord uses that in His Word as an analogy for by wisdom a house is built. Then, of course, you can use that as an illustration for anything that you build in life. And the wisdom here referring, of course, to the principles of the Word. Then verse 4, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Now, this is a part of the exercise of God's supply on His part to us, as well as super grace blessings reached when we reach maturity adjustment to the justice of God. A wise man is strong, and a man of knowledge increases power, or the concept of authority. Or, if you please, a wise man is a good leader. For by wise guidance, you will wage war. And so when he goes to war, he knows when the proper time to go to war and when the proper time not to go to war. As a matter of fact, one of the passages that we're going to deal with next is dealing with the very subject of war, where Jehoshaphat and the king of Israel get together and they align themselves to go to war against one of the other kings. And of course, we'll see what happens, and also why people succeed when they are blessed by association. We'll be covering that probably next Sunday morning, or the following Sunday, or whenever we get through with the doctrine of leadership. And the abundance of counselors, there is victory. Be careful with that passage. It actually should be translated more like, with the abundance of wise thinkers, there is victory. Not just advisors, but wisdom in the context of the wise man and wise guidance. Verse 7, wisdom is too high for a fool. He doesn't see the need for it. As a matter of fact, to him it is foolishness. He does not open his mouth in the gate, an expression used in the ancient world to describe an individual who had something to say at the gate. The gate was the place where a lot of the decisions were made with regard to the city. And we might even look at it as a city get-together, almost like the city council. And decisions were made as such, and people would actually open their mouths and have things to say with regard to the runnings and the well-being of the city, which was generally encompassed about by walls, and they had a gate. And the gate is where people would meet. And remember when it refers to, in Proverbs 31, the woman who is living her life as unto the Lord, she is spoken of well, and her husband as well, where? At the gate. And then we find that Lot sat at the gate, which would indicate that he was probably the mayor, indicating that he was in a place of authority. Nevertheless, when you are asked something, you open your mouth with wisdom. Some people are asked, and they open their mouth, and nothing but jello comes out. In other words, meaningless slop. He who plans to do evil, men will call a schemer. And by the way, going back to this, the fool also does not recognize wise counsel. And so when somebody tries to tell them something, generally an older person or somebody who has had experience in that area, why, the fool always looks at it cynically. And they think they're an exception to the rule. One, for example, and we have a policy here, and I had to more or less remind someone of it. If anyone ever comes to this church looking for money, don't ever give them my phone number. Don't ever tell them where I live. And of course, this woman called today, and she wanted money for baby formula. And to make a long story short, I have been, through my own personal experiences, not only here at Westside, but in other churches, where people do that, and they actually live off churches from California to Florida. Ironically, they take their vacations that way. Now, I remember years ago when that happened on a Thursday morning, and we had our ladies' Bible class that time, and so I hadn't gotten here yet, and the ladies were talking with a woman, and she was looking for the pastor. Well, most of you know that when I used to teach the ladies' Bible class, I taught in uniform when I was with the Glendale Police Department, and then I would leave here and walk the downtown beat in Glendale. And so I walked up to her and I said, "Do you want to see me?" And her face turned 34 different colors, and she couldn't get out of here fast enough until she found out that I was the pastor. And then she started with her pitch, and I looked at her and I said, "No way." And she says, "No way." And I said, "No way." And she says, "Okay." And she left. On another occasion, a man called me, and he was in a motel in downtown Phoenix, and said that he was stranded, and his wife had done this, and she needed that, and he had a sick this, and he had a this that. And so I said, "Well, listen, I don't really believe you." And he says, "Well, it's true." And I says, "Well, I'm a police officer, and I'm sending a patrol car down there to find out whether or not you are, in fact, in the particular situation you claim you are." And he says, "Please don't do that." And I says, "You're lying to me, aren't you?" And he says, "Yes." And I says, "You don't have all of those problems, do you?" And he says, "No." And I said, "I suggest you get out of town right now." And he said, "Okay." I don't know if he did or not, but it was a good bluff. We had another man, as you know, come in here, and he hoodwinked a lot of us. And we even rallied around him. We helped him. I gave him a tire. I gave him money. And I found out the man was wanted. Wanted in at least 3 states for felonies. And one of his schemes was to go to churches and to put on the famous help me bit. So you get rather cynical. Unfortunately, what happens in a case like that is that when somebody really needs help, too many others have cried wolf on their behalf. So how do you know? Well, you just have to be discerned. And I've been wrong once, and that was that individual. Twice. But that's pretty good for 35 years of ministry. Now she's counting. Now she's thinking. He said 35 years. Let's go back. How about... at first I was a naive nitwit, that's what I was. Man, anybody came to the door. Well, that one, I got him, though. Yeah, I got him. I got that one good. 2 o'clock in the morning, knocking on his door. And I said, unless I get my money back by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, you're going to jail. And he was there at 7 with the money. You say, well, what authority did you have? None. It's all a bluff. But it worked. Got my money back. I ran his name through NCIC and ACIC, and he had done this numerous times. He was even wanted for having done that. Wisdom is too high for a fool. You won't take advice from someone who knows better because you think you know better. Listen carefully, people, especially when your elders speak to you. That's how wisdom is passed on. Now, I realize that having said that, too often, older people have nothing to say but jelly. The other was jello, this is jelly. That's also rather sticky and mushy, and it's kind of sweet, but it gets all over you. He who plans to do evil, men will call him a schemer. The devising of folly is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to men. If you are slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. What makes for a good leader? Well, a good leader cannot get involved in one thing that we are going to again qualify, and that is in the area of management. Now, I'm using the word management rather specifically, and so therefore, you should understand by definition, it differs in that leadership is the right way to go, whereas management is the wrong way to go. Point one, leadership motivates, whereas management regulates. Management is the bureaucratic enforcement of regulations. That's how we've defined it. Repeat, management is the bureaucratic enforcement of regulations, while leadership provides self-motivation from efficient function in life. You will find that leadership motivates, leadership leads, leadership inspires, leadership creates. It invokes in the part of the followers a get-with-it spirit. Whereas management can only enforce regulations, and generally it hurts the owner of the business. And again, we're referring obviously to the union movement in this country, which has done more to destroy free enterprise than the communists. And I've heard people who are very thickly involved with unionism who are anti-communists. And they don't realize that the whole system of unionism at this point in this country is worse than communism. It's worse than the mafia. Because it has strangled production, and that's why we put out products today that are inferior to our previous enemies. The two highest economies in the world right now are the two people that we defeated in World War II. Germany and Japan have the most stable economy in the world. And you know, ours is teetering back and forth all the time. Cities, by the way, New York cities. There are cities throughout the East, the whole state of Connecticut, and other areas of the East are going bankrupt. They don't know where they're going to receive any finances. As far as unemployment, in New York alone, I think we heard on the news, it was something like from 9 to 12%. You realize what that is? You're talking about 9% of 8.5 million people. You're not talking about 9% of an area that's just involving a handful of people. That's a lot of people that are unemployed. Why? Is there no money? Is there no work? Now, we've had too much management, too much enforcing of regulation, Too much going into the shops and saying to them, you don't have enough of these and enough of those and enough of these, and so you've got to hire X amount of that and X amount of that. And you remember I reflected on that last Sunday evening. Point two, for leadership, there must be the establishment of authority. And authority is established through discipline. That's why militaries function so well. That's why our military still functions well. Because the one thing they haven't lost is the authoritarian position and the discipline that's involved. As a matter of fact, in some cases, I have learned that the disciplines are even more than they were when I was in the service. And that's encouraging. In other areas, they're slack, but the discipline teaches. And again, I must repeat, I can always tell a military type, and I can always tell one who isn't. There is something missing, and there's something there in the military type, and he has an authority orientation. He has a humility in that area which differs from the one that doesn't. See, the one thing the military does is it takes that little bit of arrogance, that one part of arrogance, and it just shaves it right off with the hair the first day. It was humiliating to me. I remember when I got off the bus, Sampson Air Force Base, Sampson, New York, in March of 1952, and I thought I was going to hit that place like a house afire. And boy, was I put in my place fast. And I had black wavy hair from here to here. And it was combed in back with the typical 50s DA. And after the first day, I looked like an eight ball. I felt like one. I sensed that I was behind one most of the time. Being short, I had also the disadvantage of trying to keep up with the large stepped individuals. They took one stride, I had to take three. The problem with that was we had to keep in time. You know, hut, hut, hut. So this guy would go, chum, 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 and I'd be going, brrrr, trying to catch up. So I'd hear all the time, Miller, catch up. I was last in the line. We'll wait. Finally, I learned to take those big steps. Boy, did I sleep well that night. My legs out like this. Then we had a group of New Yorkers there with an entire flight of West Virginians. And so we got together and we kind of put some pressure on them and we told them that we wanted them to take smaller steps for me. And they did. They almost shuffled. And here I was taking full steps to catch up. But it wasn't long. After 42 days, I was a different person. I would salute people, and I'd say yes, sir, and no, sir, and I'd say yes, sir, no, sir, to corporals. Before that, I wouldn't have dared say yes, sir, and no, sir, to a corporal. I remember the first question I was asked. I said, yeah. Well, what kind of language was that, I was told, but not in that manner. And to this day, I still say yes, as opposed to yeah. And every time I hear something, I look around for someone to swing at me. And I didn't even say it. Leadership, therefore, is established through authority. Authority is established through discipline. Discipline then becomes the foundation for good leadership. Point three, leadership delegates authority. Management stands over a person and bullies that person. I am so glad that during, for example, the last pastor's conference that we had here, and for many, many other reasons that I have men and women as a part of this local assembly that do their jobs as under the Lord, and many times I don't even know it's being done, but it's done. You don't really think, like some of these guys commended me for, that I had very much to do with that conference, do you? Oh, I made some phone calls, and I got some of the speakers, and I checked and made sure that I was informed as to what was going on, but Kurt and the others did most of it. And the success, and a man came and says, man, he says, you did a great job. I said, frankly, I didn't do anything. He said, well, you were behind it. He said, somehow he's trying to give me... And I said, I just delegated that authority, and they did a great job. When I took the directories to one of the conferences, they were so thrilled. Everybody was coming up to me. Oh, you've done such a fantastic job of it. I didn't do anything. Man came to me one day and says, I've got a burden to make up a directory. What do you think? I said, do it. Run with it. And he says, then what'd you do? And I said, nothing. Nothing? No, he's done everything. You want to thank somebody, call Mark Krigler. Who's he? He's the one that got the directory done. You're thanking me. Well, then they said, well, would you thank him for us? And says, yeah, after you pay for it. No, it was a grace thing, you understand. People came up to me and they said, well, what does something like that cost to make? I'm not sure what I'd like to give for that. And I said, oh, about $150. No, not really. I didn't tell them. I said, you just pray about it, and whatever you come up with, that's fine. That's what you say when you don't really know what the price is. Leadership delegates authority. Leadership produces esprit de corps. And that's what we need. We need that esprit de corps, that team effort, that rally around the banner boys type situation. And a good leader can do that. Whereas management always produces dissatisfaction. There's always conspiracies involved. And that's why a lot of pastors get themselves in trouble. Because they're not leaders, they're managers. And they're trying to manage the church. And they pick out key personnel and they take them to breakfasts. I've never taken anyone to breakfast except those that I wanted to. And it wasn't because I wanted to sit down and talk with them and single them out and tell them how great they're going to be and I'm going to use them in the church. That's nonsense. The Spirit of God does that. And when that man's ministry emerges within that congregation, you just simply recognize him. I've been in churches where they give people jobs that are ready to leave the church so they won't leave. I've been in Baptist churches where people were made deacons because they threatened to quit. I said, well, we can use you. We don't want to lose you. You threaten to quit here. And so, that's your attitude. Bon voyage. Literally translated, au revoir. Literally translated, see you later. Bye. There's dishonesty involved with that type of situation. There's pettiness involved. Look at all the theft involved with the idea of management. Skimming this and taking that and pulling this and cleaning that. Monies that are being sent to Swiss bank accounts. And people who have willingly given money to their retirements, and then they find out that somebody ran off with it. One of the union bosses, or one of the co-workers of the union boss, and he sits on his fat fanny behind a desk with a cigar in his mouth. You do all the work. He does nothing. And occasionally he goes and supposedly represents you and says to the individual, we need more money. And eventually the poor guy says, hey, I can't make a business. I can't make a living this way. And so he closes the business and everybody screams that they're out of a job. Look, if you work for somebody, walk up to him tomorrow, grab him by the throat and choke him until he passes out. And then see if you still have your job. Well, that's what you do to the individual. He's got to be able to breathe. And the whole idea of being in business is to do what? Make money, not lose it. and not have to pay your employees more than you have coming in. I don't know about you, but that's bad business. General Motors lost $50 million last year, and Ford lost $60 million. And I mean, why? There's Fords out there, and there's Chevrolets and Oldsmobiles and Cadillacs, and they're priced reasonably. Why don't we buy them? We have no confidence in them. That was the latest report. The American people have no confidence in American automobiles. They've lost their confidence in the American automobile. It's terrible. Why? Because leaders have been strangled and management has taken over. Leadership creates integrity. Management creates inordinate ambition. Leadership inspires humility. Management creates arrogance. You know, years ago when you got a job, you were thankful for what you got. Jobs were not that plentiful. And anyone that was a 30s child knows that as they were being raised in the Depression, that mom and dad did all they could just to make ends meet and to put food on the table. And there was nobody screaming during that time about the ill treatment of the bosses. Man, you had a job. You were thankful. And if you got paid $5 a day, wow! Today, with inflation and everything, why, you hear somebody say making $10 an hour? Well, that's nothing. $10 an hour. And the other day I heard of a baseball player. Or was it basketball? Basketball. He was offered a $5 million contract. And he turned it down. He said, no way. I'm a star. See, he's had somebody managing him. Somebody filling his head with, whatever happened to do what you're doing because you love the game? I heard somebody actually say that. He says, I've made millions in baseball. He was ready to retire. And he says, you know, they didn't know this, and I wouldn't have told them that, but I'd have played for nothing. I enjoyed the game. See, when you enjoy what you're doing, pay is just extra. But if you're doing what you're doing for the pay, it doesn't last. It becomes laborious. That doesn't mean quit your job. Please. Our deacon's fund isn't that big. Leadership inspires humility. Leadership constantly teaches and trains. Management relies on pleasing personality and making subordinates feel good. This is the average church. There's no teaching in the average church. And you see, the average member of the congregation has gotten lulled into thinking that what you're supposed to do is make them feel good. And so the pastors get up there, and Sunday after Sunday, and week after week, there's a little challenge to the Christians, and most of it is designed for the unbeliever. What an insult when we're told to teach, teach, teach. When Peter asked what he did regarding his love for the Lord, what did the Lord respond by telling him? Feed my sheep. Not the strangers, not the next door's sheep, my sheep. For my sheep hear my voice. In other words, teach the word. Paul had to tell Timothy, quit this business that you're involved with. He was involved in, for lack of a better expression, let's say he was involved in looking up astrological forecasts. And then he'd get in the pulpit and start talking about how that astrological forecast could have some meaning. And you know as well as I do that's a bunch of nonsense. It's sheer nonsense. Carl and I were talking about last week with these planets lining up. Boy, all the weirdos came out of the woodwork. And then, did we have it yet, or are we about to have an eclipse? The 11th? Oh, wow. Lining up with the planets with an eclipse. There's got to be somebody with white robes ready for the rapture at that point. Got a bunch of freakos out there. Managed. And pastors are good managers. And large churches are loaded with pastoral managers. They go around and they pat heads here and they pat head there, make people feel good. Come here and I make you irritated. Well, you look at the prophets. Look at the ministers of the word. Do you see any of them making people happy? No, they're throwing rocks at them. When John the Baptist was doing his ministering, what did he say to his congregation? Why, you generation of snakes. Who told you to come out here and listen to me? Whoa! That's not very popular. What kind of a manager are you, John the Baptist? And, I mean, he lost his head over the whole situation. You know, as well as I do, that wasn't because of that. That was because of, what's her name, wanted to do the Dance of the Seven Veils. Salome and Herod. Herod had a wife, and his wife had a daughter, and apparently she was a good-looking thing. And so he asked her to come down and do her famous veil dance. And she said, no. He said, what can I do to convince you? And she said, I'd like to have on a Charger. A Dodge, by the way. The account may not be accurate, but it's close. The whole thing is, somebody was jealous over somebody else, and they were jealous over what? A man who taught the word. They didn't like it. I had a friend of mine years ago, I wish he'd have stayed my friend and straight, but he didn't. But nevertheless, doctrinally he went off. He used to say, you know, the worst they could ever do is kill you for the ministry's sake. That's what they did to the Lord. So what do we think we are? What, are we running for a popularity contest? This is not popular. When I study this stuff, I say, well, you know, I could take this out and move this away and push that aside. And you know what you end up with? Little pies. Little pudding dishes. And I say, all right, here we go. Open light. I can't do that. Somebody said, how large do you think West Side will ever grow? Not too large. Say, why? People don't like this. Listen, people don't like to hear the truth. They'd rather be lied to. I'm not going to lie to you. Because see, I know that one day I'm going to have to stand before the Lord and I have to give an account. And so do they, by the way. But apparently it's not real to them. And he's going to ask me, what's all that stuff? What was that? What was that taking these people out to breakfast and trying to push them into work and you stay and so on? I've never had, by the way, I have never asked anyone to stay. They wanted to leave. I've never gone after them. And people say, well, you know, we haven't seen so-and-so in quite a while. Why don't you go visit them? Are you serious? That's none of my business. It's none of my business. Well, aren't you the shepherd? Yeah, but if the sheep want to run off and go somewhere else, that's fine. It's the freedom they have. What brought you here to begin with? All the advertising we gave?
You were led of the Spirit of God, and I can only assume if you leave, you're led of the Spirit of God. And if you're not, how am I going to change you? What am I going to have to say? Am I going to pay you off? Yeah, I'll give you $100 if you come back. We have a special fund for people that want to leave. I can see it now. You're right. I say, Carl will tell me later. I'm leaving. And he'll tell me five times. That's 500 worth. It's ridiculous.
It's almost as bad as that woman that my wife had an encounter with years ago. We saw this young lady, and she was quite faithful in coming to Bible class. Come to find out, every time she came, her mother paid her off. She paid her to come to class. So my wife says, what? That was the woman, you remember, that after my wife got through with her, she had paralysis of the left arm and her head fell off and all kinds of things. Blame my poor wife. She had nothing to do with it. She just told her the truth. Shouldn't I do that? She said. My wife said, what?
You do what?
Imagine you parents paying your kids to come to Bible class. Well, let's go, kids. Stand at the door. Here's your money. Now make the pastor happy. And if I found out, it wouldn't make me happy at all. Make them happy. Look at all the payoffs you have in management. The subcontractor and the subcontractor and the contractor subcontractor. And everybody gets paid all the way down the line. We had that problem here. When we first put up the building, we were doing, as a matter of fact, it was this building. We were pouring the concrete. And one of the inspectors drove in. He said, you're doing it all wrong. So we had a guy here then that understood people. And he looked at him and he said, say, no one called for you. When we need you, we'll ask for you. And then we had hired some very large men from South Phoenix. And very black and very big. And one of them spoke out and he said, sir, say the word and I'll bury him in the concrete. I loved it. Man, that guy got in his car and we passed with flying colors. He was signing the approval as he went out the driveway. It took a little persuasion. I think he was looking for a little one of these, see? You know, a lot of times you see people, they go, stop. In New York, it's common practice. Unfortunately, New Yorkers move here and they're surprised. So you give somebody something under the table and take care of it. No, it doesn't work that way here. At least it didn't. It didn't for many years. Why? Because we had leadership. Now we have management. Leadership constantly teaches and trains. People under management react and overreact, resulting in a lot of dissatisfied people. And management has a very serious problem because the one thing it cannot do is discipline. Why? Because it's based on making people feel good. And you don't discipline someone to make them feel good. Point 9, management rises to the top without ability. How about that one? I can venture to say that anybody that's been in the workforce for over 10 years can give me at least two accounts in that short period of time of people who've advanced past you and they were less qualified. But they knew somebody who knew somebody. Jerry and I were talking about a particular person who was promoted. And so I said, what color was his nose? Of course, he understood and I understood and some of you understand. And he told me the color of his nose. And that's how he advanced. There are some people that haven't seen the day of light or the light of day for years. They're too busy walking around stuffed. Well, I think it's funny, especially since I got it backwards, the day of light. Same thing. Management rises to the top without ability. In the short period of time that I was on the workforce, or in the workforce, I was an aircraft mechanic down in southern Arizona. I was told by the bosses of that particular corporation that I would be promoted to the head of that department in a short period of time simply because of my qualifications. I said, fine, great. They hired me on the basis of bringing me down there for that reason. So then about a couple of months passed, a man came in and he says, I'm the new foreman. You know, and I was rather set back a little bit, so I went into the office and I said, what happened? And he said, well, he had seniority. I said, seniority in what? Well, he's been with the company. But what has he done? Pushed a broom. You have to push a broom for 5 years, I guess you can be a foreman. And so he knew nothing about aircraft and less about engines. So he would ask me all the time, what should I do? And then he'd give orders to other people. So I was his advisor. So how do you change the plugs into that? So I'd tell him, and he'd say, by the way, go out there and river. And the one last straw, the one occasion I'll never forget, I had told him that I was going to go out and do a particular thing on an engine, and I had told him the day before how it was going to be done and what was necessary. And he says, well, whatever you think is best. So I was going out the door. He reminded me of what I had told him the day before. And by the way, don't forget to do thus and thus. And I said, I beg your pudding, pardon. And then he remembered. Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Well, I was young enough and feisty enough, my ears fell off, and Vesuvius exploded on both sides. But that's when I was young and stupid. I didn't lose my job, but I was back in the office again. So, did you ever become foreman? No. I ended up in the ministry. Say, how was that? That's a long story. Nothing whatever to do with that. The point is simple, though. We can all give accounts like that, right? Some jerk. And you say, I work for a jerk. Work for him. Why? You do your job as unto the Lord. That's what makes the difference. It's who you do it for that makes the difference. And if you try to do it as unto yourself or for the gratification of management, you're in trouble. But if you do it as unto the Lord, you'll be blessed regardless. And anticipating our study, in addition to that, because you're doing as unto the Lord and doctrine is your priority, they're going to be blessed because you're working for them and they don't even know it. And they're going to prosper because you are working for them. And their business is going to increase because you are working for them. And that's called blessing by association. Just the existence of a believer. And then add to that doctrine and maturity. Man, that's liable to be amazing to that business. But if you should leave, if it's left to their own management devices, it'll fail. It's because of you. Your neighbor's protected by virtue of the fact that you live next door to them. The state of Arizona's protected by virtue of the fact that we have pockets of categorical believers throughout the state. It's amazing. And the things that we will know in eternity of what might have been.
A business that's going down will hire you, and then all of a sudden, it prospers. Why? Because God is prospering you. He's supplying for you.
Let me give you the occasion, and I'll close. Jehoshaphat and the king of Israel get together. And Jehoshaphat said, isn't there a prophet that we can talk to about this whole thing to know whether or not we should, in fact, go against the enemy? And so one of them comes up and he says, yeah, there's Elisha. Now, we heard that before with Elijah, remember? And now we're hearing it with Elisha. So they call Elisha. And they ask, will we succeed? Will we win? And so Elisha looks at the king of Israel and says, listen, if you went by yourself, you'd lose. And God is not going to prosper you because of who you are, but for the sake of Jehoshaphat, you'll win. Blessing by association. And he did. And he wasn't worth it. But God blessed him because he blessed a believer that deserved blessing. And it just happened to leak out into the lives of others. That's peripheral blessing.
You know, that some of you have not learned this yet, that some of the things that you received in blessing are not yours at all, but you're getting them on a rebound by virtue of the fact that you're in association with a positive, mature believer. And were it not for that, you'd be living in Disasterville. That's next door. It's about 3 miles from chaos.
It's about a mile and a half down the road from total destruction. Keep your friends. They're important. Choose them selectively. Stay close to mature believers. You see, because what happens is God blesses them, and all of a sudden, you know what happens?
You get wet too. But if you hang around with only dried up fools, what happens? You end up one. That's down the road from Prunesville.
Father, thank you for the challenge this evening, the things that thy word is so clear on. Things that we must know and we must understand if we are to succeed in the Christian life. Dismiss us now, we pray in Christ's name. Amen. Have a nice week. Remember, no Bible class until next Sunday morning.